The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. Joining me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Dr. Smith, today we're talking about a topic which is really important and that every family and individual probably has some connection to at some time in their lives, and that is hospice care. We're very fortunate to have with us two guests from hospice, Dr. Albert Riddle. He's the Chief Medical Officer for Hudson Valley Hospice. Dr. Riddle is a long-term care physician and educator and is the founder and president of the Riddle Medical Group, which provides medical direction, primary care services, and quality assurance consulting to long-term care facilities. He was also awarded the designation of Certified Medical Director by the American Medical Directors Association and serves on their National Clinical Practices Guidelines Committee. We also have Jason Wertheim. Did I get that right, Jason?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's Hudson Valley Hospice's Vice President of Patient Services. He oversees all clinical aspects of Hudson Valley Hospice. He's a graduate of the Massachusetts General Hospital Institute of Health Professions, where he received a Master's of Science in Nursing. Jason has 25 years of clinical hospice experience. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Let's start with some of the background so our listeners can gain an understanding of what hospice is. I'm sure there are a lot of misconceptions out there about what it is and what it isn't. And I'm sure there are many people who don't even know anything about it or know bits and pieces. So can we start by explaining what hospice is?
Sure. Hospice is a program for patients with advanced illness. Most of the care that's provided is provided at home, but we also provide care in nursing homes and hospitals as well. It's really care that's focused on comfort. Instead of aggressively treating the disease, hospice really aggressively treats the symptoms that that disease gives the patient. That's, to me, the sort of the basic hallmarks of hospice in a
How does that manifest, actually? And so if you were to take like an example of a patient or someone that comes to you, what does that look like?
It's different in all different cases. So I've been a hospice nurse for a long time. When I started, 80% of patients had cancer and 20% were non-cancer. Those statistics have really changed completely in the 28 years that I've been a hospice nurse. Now it's probably 60% non-cancer diagnoses and 40% cancer. So the non-cancer diagnoses are much less predictable. There's just a whole variety of diseases that we see, patients with end-stage heart disease, end-stage COPD, you know, respiratory illnesses, Alzheimer's or other types of dementia. So it's different in all sort of different cases.
And I just want to set the framework for how we approach patients and patient care. When you look at the history of hospice, it started out actually about a half century ago in this country, the modern age of hospice anyway, with a nurse who had the idea from caring for terminally ill patients that there was a lot missing in how we delivered that care. So she spent many hours and days and worked very hard with these terminally ill patients, but she then herself, and her name was Cicely Saunders, developed an illness that didn't allow her to continue working as a nurse. So she started then to work more as a medical social worker. And she continued to work with the different aspects of terminal care to the point where someone eventually gave her the idea to go to medical school. And I don't know where she got the energy from because she had this chronic illness, but she winds up going to medical school. And from that point of getting her medical degree, she continued to have that interest in terminal illness, but then added to that this aspect of pain management from the perspective of this concept of total pain, which means not just looking at the physical parts of pain that we always think about, but also adding to that the social aspects of pain and the spiritual aspects of pain. And this starts to get us then into this discussion about how broad hospice is in its approach to managing patients with terminal illness.
And those are such critical dimensions, especially at end of life, when spiritual elements and emotional people are looking back on their lives, I'm sure. And that woman, imagine taking such a tremendous personal challenge and then turning it into an opportunity, not only for herself, but for many, many people to come, for generations. And so how do people find you? Do they primarily get referred by physicians or spiritual counselors, or how does that work?
Referrals can come from anybody. So sometimes it's the physician who makes that recommendation. Sometimes it's the family who says, you know, maybe this is the time for hospice. Sometimes it's a priest, rabbi, you know. So it's a whole variety of referral sources. Sometimes patients are being cared for by a home care agency at home, and they're the ones who say maybe it's time for hospice. Mm-hmm.
Typically, how long will somebody be in hospice care?
Well, there's the ideal and then there's the reality. So our median length of stay is around 14 to 18 days, changes, you know, from month to month. So that means 50% of patients are on program a little more than 2 weeks or less. That's not to say that we have patients who are on programs for years. So as long as somebody continues to be terminally ill, they can stay on our program. But unfortunately, because I think there's still a big stigma about death and hospice as sort of the name of that, patients are very, very often referred way too late. And so we're caring for them for days at times. But ideally, we'd like to be involved with patients for a period of time, because our team gets to know the patient and the family and really help support them. So the team is one of the key concepts, I think, of hospice. I just wanted to talk about that for
sure,
a second.
Sure, please do.
It's truly an interdisciplinary team approach to the care of these patients. And the nurse is a key player, and I'm a little biased since I'm a nurse. But we also, the social worker is a key player in the team. The social worker is really helping them with how they're coping emotionally with the patient's illness. They do a lot of work with the family to help support them. The nurse is doing a lot of teaching, teaching the patient what to expect and teaching the family how to manage the symptoms that the illness gives them. We have chaplains who are important parts of the team. Volunteers, we have music therapists, home health aides. So it's a really interdisciplinary way that we try to take care of these patients. And we have team meetings regularly where all the patients are talked about so that we can get the
everybody
input
on the same page.
Exactly. And, yeah. And get the input that sometimes the nurse sees one thing, the social work sees another, and we try to pull them together at the team meeting.
Uh-huh. And so the treatment or the program takes place either at a designated center that you have or at the patient's home? Is it up to them, or is it on a space available basis, or how does that work?
So our hospice is mainly home-based. We don't have a hospice unit or a hospice residence. So most of the care that we provide is in the patient's home. We serve both Dutchess and Ulster counties, so we're all over both counties. We do care for patients in nursing home settings, and then when our patients need to go into the hospital, we'll follow them. We also admit patients who are very ill in the hospital onto hospice.
And we also have agreements with certain long-term care facilities to try to take some of the inpatients who get better but still aren't well enough to go home, or at least not at the point that they're starting to improve, and use agreements that we have with certain long-term care facilities to transfer those patients from a hospital, which is not a pleasant place to be
right,
in many circumstances, and get them into a long-term care facilities where they can be put at a more stable level in an environment that's more home-like than the hospital would be, but that still has the skilled services available that they need until they're more stable to actually go home.
And to what extent does a patient's physician remain involved in the process? Is that really up to the person in terms of how much they want their personal physician versus services or some combination? How does that work?
This is important to talk about, and it's a complicated answer to give, but the quick answer is that it's a unique setup that we have with every case that we come across. There will be some situations where the physician will want to remain fully hands-on, will want to maintain full management capability from a physician standpoint, working with the interdisciplinary team that Jason just spoke about. There will be other physicians that will want to be less involved and have varying degrees of involvement. And our job at the beginning of each case is to have that discussion and understanding with the existing attending physician as far as what level of participation and management they want to maintain. And then we're able to pick up from there what our end is going to look like. So just so you know, on hospice's end, we have several physicians that are on staff at hospice. I serve as chief medical officer. We have a medical director for the Dutchess County team and another medical director for the Ulster County team. And we also have other physicians that are available to us, so that if the attending physician that refers the case does not want to be fully involved, we're fully able to then pick up the pieces that need to be filled in order to provide that person with all of the medical care that they'll need going forward.
That's really great. And in terms of treatment, so if they might be on a medication regimen or what have you, is that determined through collaboration between the patient's physician, the patient, and yourself? Is that the way that works?
Collaboration is very important to us. So the involvement of all of the pieces that you just mentioned, from the patient to the existing attending, to any consultant physicians that may be involved, whether they be oncologist or cardiologist or pulmonologist, we try to pull everyone in so that there is a team approach to making choices about the best treatment options. One thing you have to remember, these are terminally ill patients, and not every treatment option that may be available may be appropriate given in the medical condition of that patient. So we try to work with that on a team concept and come to the right decisions for that patient, with the patient's involvement included.
That's great. And this is really great work that you guys do. And we'd like to learn a whole lot more about it. But first, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back soon.
The heart is a complex organ, but finding specialized cardiovascular care in Poughkeepsie and Kingston is so easy. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital are now home to WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute, the Hudson Valley's largest multi-specialty cardiovascular practice. They have state-of-the-art diagnostics and innovative imaging and testing technologies. You'll receive comprehensive cardiac and vascular care from some of the world's top cardiologists and vascular surgeons. You'll also have a seamless connection to advanced care at WMC Health's flagship hospital, Westchester Medical Center. The best cardiovascular care comes from the best people, and now the very best are right in your backyard. Visit wmchealth.org/heart to discover more about WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital. Members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMC Health, advancing care here.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guests today are Dr. Albert Riddle, who is Chief Medical Officer for Hudson Valley Hospice, and Jason Wertheim, who is the Vice President of Patient Services for Hudson Valley Hospice. Dr. Riddle, before the break, you were talking about the fact that cancer is not the only condition for which you care for hospice patients. Would you like to elaborate on some of the other diseases that may be in their final stages?
We see a variety of conditions, such as end-stage congestive heart failure, end-stage COPD or emphysema. We see neurologic conditions such as ALS, multiple sclerosis, HIV. We see not as much of as other conditions, but we certainly do see that from time to time. And one of the more common conditions that we run across now is Alzheimer's disease. So Jason mentioned earlier before the break that we have on average a stay of about 14 days. And I would like to reiterate at this point that much of that happens because of late referrals. And we really would be able to do a much better job if we got earlier referrals and could intervene with families at an earlier point. That being said, with Alzheimer's, it's a little bit different than the other disease processes. And by length of stay, let me just explain what I'm talking about. So you have someone with end-stage COPD. And with each condition, what we look at are these things called disease trajectories. And when we place someone in hospice, we have to certify that they have a six-month prognosis or life expectancy. So there's a predictable decline that happens with a disease like COPD or congestive heart failure. There's a predictable decline that happens with a disease like cancer. There's also a predictable decline that happens with Alzheimer's disease, but it is a decline with a lot of unpredictability amongst the predictability. So that someone with hospice can have, or someone with Alzheimer's rather, can have a decline that is so shallow, let's say, that they can go on for 2 years, maybe 3 years, having terminal conditions of Alzheimer's, but still manage to hang on. So that this type of thing has an impact on our length of stay, just in terms of the different diseases that we may be dealing with, in addition to the lateness of the referrals that we may be getting.
So how does a family know when is the right time to get in touch with you? I mean, we're lay people out there. We're not familiar. How do we know what is the best time or most appropriate time?
So some of that's going to go to what not only the family will see, but also the physicians that are caring for the patient. One of the things that certainly points a signal is whether or not they're starting to have repeated hospitalizations over a short period of time.
Or trips to the emergency room.
Or even trips, that's correct, even trips to the emergency room. Or if they're just even reaching out to their doctor more often, maybe a phone call that's made now, followed up with another phone call 2 weeks from now and a month from now, and there's just a lot of uncertainty that you're hearing on the other end of that line because of a chronic condition that's starting to advance. So that's a more subtle sign, but certainly the repeated hospitalizations and emergency room visits.
We see people at also, you know, at who are just starting to slowly decline, and maybe they've been hospitalized, and in the past they've been brought back to, you know, their full level of functioning. But each time now they're coming back from the hospital a little weaker, a little less able to do their activities of daily living, you know, taking care of themselves. So these are people who may be starting to go down the line towards hospice and might need our services. I think one of the points I want to make is that it's not necessarily up to you as a layperson making the referral to make that determination. Mm-hmm. We send folks out to the home to assess the patient. We contact their physician. So we'll do a lot of that legwork for them. You know, we'll try to get some history of how the patient is now, how they've been in the last 6 months, what changes have occurred, to sort of paint that picture to see if the patient's possibly appropriate for hospice. So that's our job. It's not the family's job to make that determination.
Do you think the average physician, primary or specialist, has the training to know when to make that call?
I'll speak from my own circumstance. During my training, which I hate to admit was more than 3 decades ago, but we really didn't get training on end-of-life management to the extent of being able to do prediction and make referrals to hospice. I know it's something that is being introduced more into current teaching and training programs. So I think the age of the doctor is going to determine a lot, you know, their experience with what they've had in terms of being exposed to this kind of thinking and making referrals. And I'll tell you one other thing that's more of a subtle thing in some cases, but not others. And that is looking at a patient in terms of their response to treatment. Not just is the disease responding to the medication that you're giving or radiation therapy or other types of things that you're giving, but also that person's ability to tolerate those treatments. We see so many cases that are referred to us at a time when they have had chemotherapy. They are now getting ulcers from the therapy, or they're not eating, or they have nausea and vomiting that's unbearable. And for that reason, they decide, hey, this isn't for me anymore. What can I do about this? And I think that, again, speaks to our general principle of we try to get the medical care away from the curative and into more the realm of the symptom management. And it's more important to think about quality of the end of life at that point.
Mm-hmm. And I like to make the point that it's just a slight change in focus, that we're aggressively treating the patient's symptoms. And if that means going into the hospital for to, you know, for to get fluid off a patient with CHF, that's certainly appropriate in hospice. There's a misconception that hospice means no care and that the doctor is going to take away medications. And that's not what hospice is. Hospice is about the most appropriate care for that patient with a focus on keeping them at home, keeping that, or if their home is in the nursing home, keeping them there. It's that's what it's all about.
So families really who might think, who don't know what hospice is, might think, well, gee, if I call them, then my loved one is going to be taken somewhere and I'm never going to see them again or see them sporadically. That's not what this is about, correct?
Hospice is care at home. Dr. Saunders, who started hospice, in England, the model is people went to a place to die. In the United States, the model is care for patients at home. And hospice brings in our team to care for the patients at home to help support the family who's caring for the patient at home. I think that, you know, that is, it's a special type of relationship that we build with the families to empower them to take care of the patient.
And that's a key component, right? I mean, because as challenging and difficult and painful as it may be for the patient, the families are going through a lot of emotional stress and strain with all of this.
And I think this is one piece of hospice that's really important that we haven't touched on yet, and that is the bereavement services that we provide with our chaplain, with our social workers, with the other members of the team that are involved. And one of the things that really strikes me about the care that we deliver is even being able to assess the situation for those cases of extreme bereavement that you may see at times and to be able to intervene for that. And also, a very important thing to point out is that that doesn't stop when the patient dies. We continue those bereavement services for the family well beyond the death.
13 months.
That's really terrific.
And I think that's a big part of hospice that is often overlooked because we tend to just think about the episode of care, but the episode of care goes beyond the date of death.
Certainly, you know, everyone is concerned these days, especially about payment for care. Can you talk a little bit about how that works with respect to insurance coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, whatever? And certainly for those individuals who don't have family, maybe living close or who are otherwise able to care for their needs as the person starts to decline and needs more and more help with assistance with various chores of daily living or self-care. You know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. And for the bereavement services in terms of who would pay for that at that point? Does that get charged back to the case that was under hospice care, or is there some other vehicle for supporting that type of service?
So hospice is cared for by practically all insurances. Different insurances will have different coverage, but essentially, you know, Medicare and Medicaid are the standards. Hospice care is covered as long as the hospice medical director and the patient's physician feel that the patient's appropriate for hospice. The services are covered at 100%. There's no copayment. There's no deductibles for the hospice services. And we cover, besides the individuals going to the home, we also cover medications that are related to the terminal illness. We cover equipment that the patient would need. So it's fairly comprehensive benefit that we offer. Bereavement is also a covered expense. It's part of what Medicare and the other insurances pay for. And so there's not an extra bill to the patient or to the family.
That's really terrific. Yeah. So for folks out there, they should know that if you are in a situation where a loved one is gravely ill or at the end of life, or perhaps you are, that you don't have to go it alone. There's a really, really terrific organization, Hudson Valley Hospice of the Hudson Valley. So how do folks get in touch with you or get more information?
So one of the best resources is our website, which is hvhospice.org. That's HOSPICE. And our referral center phone number is 845-240-7555. And that's the best place to call for information.
That's really great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but
thank you so much for
the great work that you and your colleagues do. We couldn't be more grateful for that kind of work. And Dr. Smith, time always goes too fast.
Oh, always.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family and our community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.